Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Dobrý večer and welcome to the Bohemian Podcast with Piet Coleman and Travis Dole.
Dobrý večer from Prague, and welcome to tonight's episode of the Bohemian Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dow from the History of Alchemy Podcast.
When a nation is under rule from a puppet government or completely controlled by a foreign entity, dissension can spread like wildfire. The onus is on the governing authorities to quell such uprisings while in its beginning stages. When the Iron Curtain fell over Central Europe, such uprisings were forming, and that is where we start our program tonight. It is the stuff of Cold War cat-and-mouse legends, something that would be a thrilling plot device in any espionage novel of the 1950s. The Machin brothers were baptized in flames of post-World War II Europe. Some say they had the affliction of their father's revolutionary blood coursing through their veins. Others called the brothers freedom fighters for the oppressed. So Travis, when the Czechs look back at the Machin brothers, they are difficult to hold close to one's chest. Today, there are many that call the brothers stone-cold killers, while others mention their memory with reverence as honored resistance fighters. Maybe we can better understand them if we know more about their father.
Yeah, that's right, Pete. The brother's father, Josef Machin, was a member of the Tri Králové resistance in World War II. Like, basically the Three Kings resistance in World War II.
Very famous resistance.
Yeah, Josef Machin was born at Lošany near Kolín. He was a member of the Czechoslovak legions fighting in Russia, you know, from 1916 to 1921. And later, an officer in the Czechoslovak army. He's basically a commander of an artillery regiment. After the occupation of Czechoslovakia by Nazi Germany, together with Josef Balaban and Václav Moravec, formed a resistance group concentrated on intelligence gathering and sabotage. While more resistance groups existed, this one, aptly named Tri Králové, the Three Kings, is the most known among the Czech public. Machin was captured by the Gestapo on May 13th, 1941. After being tortured, he twice attempted suicide. As part of the German retaliatory measures for his assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, he was executed in Prague. His body was disposed of at the Strażnice Crematorium. Even his wife was imprisoned for several months. After the war, Josef Machin received a posthumous promotion to Brigadier General. His sons, which were at that time were only 13 and 15 years old, got medals for personal bravery during the war from President Edvard Beneš.
So Travis, you can see this right now, that this was not the best situation to grow up as a young teenager, to see your father executed like this during the height of Nazi occupation and basically the imprisonment of their mother. The times really formed who they were as young men. As we see later on, and as we know through history, yes, the Allies won World War II, but then as soon as that, as soon as the transition left with the Nazis leaving and being disbanded, then came in the Communists. So you can see that there was very little time for the Czechoslovakia to kind of come into their own as their own entity. They were taken over by another foreign power. Following World War II, Machin's sons were both born in Prague, of course, and attended high school in Podrady. After the Communists seized power, they witnessed how some of their family's friends, opponents of the regime, were silenced and vanished without a trace, or even sentenced to death in public show trials. The Machins shared the idea that the Americans, who had helped to establish the Czechoslovakian state, would soon come to their rescue and wipe out Communists altogether, which what many would call World War III. They saw a promise that possibly Western powers would come in to help them. But we all know through historical sort of information that was not going to be possible. We saw that in Budapest in the 50s.
Yeah.
We saw it throughout all the satellite countries of the sphere of influence of Russia at the time, of the Soviet Union, that was not going to be possible without forcing another war, another great war on people that just was not really not possible. The Meshin brothers formed a military resistance group with very few friends. The brothers' uncle, Sidor Novak, a former Secret Service officer, became an advisor of this group. Now, this is kind of important, Travis, if we look at this. Once Mr. Novak was questioned about his involvement with training the brothers, Novak pleaded plausible deniability by saying that he was only engaged with his nephews in hopes of controlling their hot tempers and instructing them and kind of diffuse their escalating plans that they had. Of course, that really wasn't necessarily the truth, because at the time, his defense strategy was that on trial in 1954 kind of showed him being more supportive and encouraging of the brothers' actions. The brothers and Novak were the only ones in the whole no-name group, quote-unquote, who knew all the other members by name.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay? So let's take a look at some of the actions that are attributed to the Meshin brothers, Travis, that led up to their infamy.
Yeah, so in 1951, the group raided two police stations in order to get weapons and ammunition. In both cases, one policeman was killed. In fact, one of them was previously chloroformed and handcuffed, so it's not like an accidental shooting. It was
on purpose.
Kind of some brutality there. And since it was becoming increasingly difficult to conduct actions, the brothers decided to go west. Their goal was to get some real training in partisan warfare techniques from the Americans. They believed a shooting war was imminent and that they wanted to return to Czechoslovakia in the vanguard of the liberating Western armies. A first escape attempt failed when a CIC agent who was supposed to accompany them was arrested by the Czechoslovak secret police, like they're known as they're basically the STB. So during interrogation, he named Stirad Mashin. Shortly thereafter, both brothers and Novak were arrested by the STB and were tortured. The STB never found out that they had seized the men responsible for the police station raids. So Josef Mashin and his uncle were released after a few months. Stirad Mashin was sentenced to 2 years slave labor for the crime of knowing about someone else's planned escape, but not reporting it. He was sent to work in a uranium mine near Yakhimov.
Which is not uncommon, Travis, that political enemies of the state would be sent to uranium mines, which was pretty much a death sentence in many cases.
Mashin states that his time in the Czechoslovak equivalent of the Gulag made him even more determined to fight the regime. So during Stirad Mashin's imprisonment, the others attacked a payroll transport and obtained some 846,000 Czechoslovak crowns. One of the car's occupants raised his pistol against Josef Mashin and was shot by him. After Stirad Mashin's release, the group stole four chests totaling 100 kilograms of explosives from a quarry. They planned to blow up a uranium train with these explosives, which doesn't sound like a good idea, by the way.
No, it doesn't.
Or possibly even blow up President Gottwald's personal train. The last action before their escape was the Night of Great Fires. In several Moravian villages, Václav Šveda and Stirad Mashin placed incendiary composition with time fuses into straw stacks, timed to all light up in the middle of the night. The action was a protest against the socialist collectivization of agriculture. At that time, even straw was in short supply, so the Mashin's intention was not only spreading shock and awe, but really kind of hurt the economy of these agricultural collectives. A firefighter was gunned down. While one source states he died with one bullet in his eye and one in his lungs, most others mentions only three casualties in Czechoslovakia, which means he must have survived.
Right. So you can see at this point throughout Moravia and Czechoslovakia, that this kind of swarm of terror sort of tactics were used. Now, of course, you know, one man's terrorist might be another man's freedom fighter, and that basically the Meshin brothers were trying to cause, in this particular issue, some disruption of the agricultural collectives that were not really taking such great root among people that considered personal property part of their deal and not part of the state. So there was a lot of work in there for them to do to try to raise awareness that they were against this collectivism that was going on by the socialist powers. In October 1953, the group made a second attempt to escape to the West. Radio Free Europe broadcast made it sound as if World War III was imminent and was coming down the pike. The Machin brothers and their friends wanted to take part in this invasion, so they claimed that the police had still no leads on their actions. Therefore, the danger of being arrested was not a reason for their escape. On the night of the 3rd and the 4th of October, Zbigniew Yatana and Václav Zveta, Milan Palmer, and so the Machin brothers crossed the border into East Germany near the mountain of St. Catherine in order to get to the western part of Berlin. Now, Travis, you've been to Berlin. I've briefly been to Berlin. At the time...
I've been to West Berlin.
West Berlin.
I've been to East Berlin.
Yeah, so you've seen both.
Back when it was East Berlin.
Now, the wall, there's only pieces of the wall there now today. But how the wall was set up, what it probably looked like towards the middle to end of the Cold War, this was not the case, Travis, of what it looked like in the early 1950s. Really a rudimentary sort of demarcation, and still not really controlled that well because people were kind of going back and forth. But yeah. Still, I'm sure, very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, like when they mentioned there's trams going back and forth, there were still people checking everybody on the tram. Like, it was still a huge hassle. And
this is pretty much what happened. You mentioned about checking passports and identities. The border guards could not manage to check the identity of every passenger. So
right.
There was a chance for, you know, maybe four or five to reach their destination without being discovered, especially because their names and their activities were not yet known to the East German police. After 3 days of walking through the cold, they tried to hijack a car. This attempt failed, but now the police started searching for the five armed foreigners. So now they got an idea that they have five people in their party, and they're going to keep an eye out for them. The fugitives made another mistake by taking a train which they thought would bring them closer to Berlin. But in fact, the train that they were on, they misunderstood an announcement that the train would go back to where they had started off from the very beginning.
Oh, man.
So they're on the wrong train, man. All right? So it's not going well.
I can just see five Czechs standing around like, did they just say they're going to Berlin from Prague or from...
Yeah. So like, how good is your German?
Trying to interpret the German. Yeah.
The next time they took a train ended in disaster, so it didn't get any better. The woman who sold the ticket informed the police about some suspicious foreigners, quote unquote. At the next station, the police waited for the train and checked the passengers one by one,
yeah.
This time not fooling around. When challenged, the group started shooting, killing one policeman and injuring two others. All right. Shortly after the incident, Zbigniew Yatana separated from the others and was caught. Only after interrogating him and consulting with the Czechoslovak authorities did the East German police know who they were actually dealing with. Now, the biggest manhunt in all of the People's Police had started. After finding and losing the track of the refugees several times, more and more troops were ordered to support the manhunt. Only one predecessor of the East German Army at the time, the so-called Barricaded People's Police. Those troops, and eventually even the Soviet Red Army troops based in the GDR, were also asked to be an assistance in this manhunt. So we can say it again, the hunt was on, Travis.
Yeah. So eventually, there were thousands of people involved in this manhunt for these four anti-communists. Right after their arrival in West Berlin, Western newspapers wrote of 20,000 Vopos. Vopos is short for Volkspolizei officer. Wolfgang Mittmann, who is a true crime author and former member of the Volkspolizei, states that according to the final report, there were really only 5,000 policemen involved in the manhunt, plus some troops of the secret police, plus troops of the Red Army. But he claims, you know, 20,000 is probably an over-exaggeration. So their whole number does not really appear in the police files. Three pursuers were shot by the group. At least three more bystanders died in friendly fire.
At Waldo, about 100 kilometers from Berlin, the group was encircled. And this is where it gets kind of tricky. They waited for the night and then managed to run through the encirclement. The next day, Václav Sveta, hurt by a stray bullet, surrendered and was eventually found by the police. He was executed in Czechoslovakia in 1955. Several times the police were called because of rumors that someone had seen these Czechs. Many of the troops were inexperienced young men who had just joined the armed forces only weeks or months beforehand. They did not get any official information about their officers, and therefore rumors spread in which the Czechs were depicted as savages who had killed countless pursuers. So you can see that the spin machine was starting to work here to get the people galvanized against what many would feel are, you know, revolutionaries.
It's kind of like they got this Wild West reputation. It's like, you
very
know,
very quickly, doesn't
like,
it?
Oh man, it's like Billy the Kid. He shot 1,000 people, and not including Mexicans. Yeah.
Shot a man just for snoring.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Basically, I got the same feeling here on this one. So therefore, the troops, whenever assuming that the fugitives were around, shot at anything and everything that moved, and afterwards wrote into the reports that they had fired at the Czechs, but had missed.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, one can find a gun battle at places that the fugitives never were close to.
Yeah.
So, you know, their legend, their living legend was kind of spreading throughout the countryside. moreover, the Moshans were, after arriving in the West, consciously changed some of their details to their story in order to protect people who had protected them. Now, keep in mind, there was a ripple effect here. Anybody connected to the Moshan brothers were either executed or sent away for camps and re-education camps and uranium mines. That's unfortunate. Or their lives were definitely changed. For instance, they claimed that they had crossed with crossed the Autobahn between Berlin and Dresden after the Waldo battle and found refuge with a family in Schoenwald. Though later there were people in Schoenwald who remembered the Moshans' visit, several researchers found out that they had never made it there, right? So we're kind of seeing a lot of misinformation here about what happened with them. So on November 2nd, 1953, the Moshan brothers and Palmer reached their destination. Sfirad Moshan, under the floor of a suburban train, Milan Palmer and Yosef Moshan somehow managed to cross the border on foot.
The follow-up, or the after-effects, was basically back in Czechoslovakia, people who had any association with the Moshans received pretty harsh treatment. So Václav Švěda, Zbigněk Janata, and Stibor Novák were sentenced to death and executed. Their bodies were not delivered to their families, but buried in anonymous common graves. Farewell letters to their families were found 45 years later, only after the Velvet Revolution. Other friends and relatives were sentenced to many years of imprisonment. The Moshan's mother, Stena Mashinova, who was not involved at all in the military resistance of her son, died in prison on June 12, 1956. So even the Moshan's little sister, her name also Stena Mashinova, was jailed. Today she is still considered an icon for the Czech anti-communist movement. So she had nothing to do with this at all.
No, the problem was
wrong last name.
Anybody that was connected to the Moshan brothers basically had their lives turned upside down, if not ended very quickly by the communist regime. In East Germany, whose armed forces had been really humiliated during this whole manhunt, were brushed under the carpet. You really didn't talk about it that much more. In Czechoslovakia, communist propaganda made full use of the Moshan's actions, describing them as looters and brutal murderers of innocent passersby. Their actions were used to justify tighter control over society and brutal treatment of any opponents. Mm-hmm. So I would have to probably say at one point, you know, was this worth it? We're talking about, we have several more decades ahead of the Czech people under communist rule. Did it make their lives any better? Most likely not. The brothers found their way to the United States and served, actually, believe this or not, in the United States Special Armed Forces at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, for about 5 years apiece. Both brothers continued to live there and refused to enter Czech soil again unless they were fully rehabilitated. In 2001, Milan Palmer sold his home in Florida and moved back to Podobrady, where he had died in 2010. Stirad Moshan died in Cleveland, Ohio in 2011, and soon after Yosef died a few years later after that. You know, going back to the Czech Republic at the time, as a new republic, some considered, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, considered them freedom fighters and heroes, and others considered them cold-blooded killers.
Yeah.
So they were kind of, you know, three men caught between two worlds, one leg in and one leg out. That must have been, you know, very tough for them. So in conclusion tonight, after the fall of communism in Czechoslovakia in 1989, the oppression and crimes of Communist Party were officially condemned, and those sentenced during the communist era for political crimes were generally recognized in law as innocent victims. The Moshans became the most disputed exceptions to this rule. Even 55 or close to 60 years later, after the case of the Moshans, it's able to deeply divide the Czech public into two groups, one seeing them as heroes and others abhorring their actions as brutal killers. Politicians in Czech Republic today still face an uneasy problem in trying to take a clear stand on the Moshan brothers, Travis.
I see this a lot, like talking to Czechs or Germans or anybody. There's a lot of times no side is wrong. The problem is, do you believe the propaganda as fact? So like you were saying, like the East Germans played down the manhunt like nothing happened, or they kind of exaggerated them as like these savages and, you know, killing innocents and looting and that kind of thing. So a lot of people just, that's what the news said, that's what they believed. And the Velvet Revolution doesn't change that for them. Like they say like, no, these guys are insane, you know, like criminally insane killers. They're horrible people. Done. They'll never change their mind. And the other people kind of look at it and they might go back and read about some of this stuff and they say, well, no, but the facts were wrong. There was a huge cover up. You know, there were shootouts in places that were never where they never were, period.
As we know for a fact, they weren't in some of these places.
Yeah, so only three people died, and I mean, one policeman that was, you know, chloroformed and handcuffed, that's not right. But, you know, overall, three people died, and they made a pretty clean getaway and made a fool out of the East Germans. And if you look at it, you know, all the deaths attributed to them weren't them, if anybody even died at all. So if you go back, I mean, again, like, so someone that re-looks at the facts and say, wait, the propaganda wasn't real, and I have a better picture of it, and hey, these guys were fighting against communism, and, you know, everybody around them suffered. Are they heroes? I don't know. But I've seen that quite a bit, that the people that really are on the other side will say, well, it's just the people that listen to the radio and never heard anything else. So they just kind of listen to propaganda.
You know, if you take these men that at the time were young teenagers during World War II, and you plop them down in occupied France, they definitely would be the French underground heroes.
Yeah.
You know, at the time.
Yeah.
If you take them into as we approach the first two decades of the 21st century, you'd probably consider them terrorists. It's contextually trying to place the Machine Brothers into a category is going to be very, very difficult, even during the time of communism. And I think we've kind of given a little bit of information on both sides of the argument tonight.
But it's funny, right? Because their father was involved in Heydrich's killing. So that was clearly a good thing, and he was honored for that. In fact, the children were honored for their father's deeds. But two whole villages were wiped off the face of the earth because of Heydrich's death. So if you look at the consequences, like, well, I mean, in my mind, that was clearly a great thing. That guy needed to be put down. He was like one of the most evil people that ever walked the earth, worse than Hitler and Himmler. Absolutely, had to happen. But still, if you look at the consequences, well, yeah. And so you look at these guys and you say, well, okay, they were fighting communism. That was clearly a good thing. Yeah, but a lot of innocent people got hurt in the process.
What their father did in World War II versus what these guys did during the beginning of the Cold War, I would also have to say that, you know, yes, probably more people died, but as a result of what Machin Sr. did during World War II.
But had to happen.
It had to happen.
Completely justified.
But at the time, the rest of the world caught notice of Lidice,
yeah.
That empowered people to kind of move harder with the war effort. Unfortunately, you know, for the Machin brothers in the 1950s, their exploits were somewhat quieter into the West. They didn't get the same headlines.
And they were working under the same pretext that there would be an invasion any minute.
Right.
You know, so
which didn't
happen. It's like, okay, something's going to hit the fan, but any minute now the Americans are going to come marching in. So we want to be on the other side of the front, you know. And it never happened, so their mother and sister rotted in prison.
They did, of course, we talk about going back to, they went to the United States and lived out their lives here, but they must have felt at some point a disconnect with their homeland, their home country of the Czech Republic in the late 20th and early 21st century before they passed away.
Moving from
it must have been a very sad situation for them.
From Florida, Potty Brody? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we want to thank you tonight for listening to this edition of the Bohemican Podcast. Feel free to stop by bohemican.com for further information and all things Czech from an American expat perspective, of course. For Travis Dow, I'm Pete Coleman. Good night from Prague.
You have been listening to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow. Visit bohemican.com for more information on this episode, other episodes, and much more information about history, traditions, and culture in the Czech Republic. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, and review, and don't forget to rate us. We would love to hear from you. Send comments, ideas, and corrections on our comments page on bohemican.com or get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. Tune in to our sister podcast, History of Alchemy, which is also on iTunes or on historyofalchemy.com. Until next time on the Bohemican Podcast, thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.